Hello, this is Issa Kahn for The Longview. Please visit WUML-longview.org for additional topical information. This week's topic is public transportation as a means for sustainability. Instead of an interview, we're going to be hearing an important excerpt from a talk given by Michael Dukakis, former Massachusetts governor and a 1988 presidential candidate. Through the efforts of Professor Bill Mass of the RESD Master's Degree Program, UMass Lowell hosted Mr. Dukakis to speak about this topic, for which he has great passion. Now a faculty member at Northeastern University, Professor Dukakis is a man who walks the walk, famous for his insistence on utilizing public transportation at most every opportunity. He's been a model of the potential for reliance on this cheaper, greener, and more community-oriented mode of getting around.
Bill, thank you very much, and thank you all. It's great to be back in one of my favorite cities. I grew up in the Acre in Centerville, spent a lot of time here, and by the time I became governor in 1975, this was a city that was almost dead. And the fact that today it serves as a model for revitalization of older urban communities is not an accident, folks. It took a lot of work, took a lot of effort. Still lots to do, as we do in all of the other older urban communities. Lawrence desperately needs help, support, commitment, and it can't do it all by itself. And rail, as I will try to explain in a minute, is an essential part of that. If you don't believe me, get out of the city of Brockton today, which was a dying city 10 years ago, and today is coming back. Why? Because we connected Brockton to Boston with commuter rail. Now, they also elected a good mayor, and they've done some other things. But that rail connection is absolutely critical to that city's future, this city's success, and the success, I would argue, of New England and especially its older urban communities. Anyway, let me talk to you about my topic today, the future of regional transportation in New England, although a lot of what I'm going to say can be applied to the country as a whole. Look, folks, gas is $3. There are a lot of reasons why we're at war in Iraq these days, none of them legitimate, in my judgment. But you can't argue that oil, at least to some extent, plays a major role in Middle Eastern policy, right? And especially our dependency on Middle Eastern oil. We have environmental issues that we're attempting to deal with. And we have this extraordinary resource nationwide and in New England, a rail network which is sitting there, underutilized, in many cases unloved, and certainly underinvested in, if there is such a word. And as you look at this region's future, as you look at the nation's future, it seems to me it's almost a no-brainer. We ought to be investing in what some people have called the steel interstate, Interstate 2, TWO, whatever you want to call it. We ought to be investing in a first-class national rail passenger system. And no region ought to appreciate that more than New England. And my frustration these days is I don't see anybody in a position of political leadership who's saying that. Now, I happen to be the lead governor for the New England governors and the Northeast governors when I was governor on this whole issue of rail transportation. And if it hadn't been for the New England governors and the coalition of Northeast governors, we would have lost rail service up here because President Reagan wanted to abolish Amtrak. I mean, get rid of it. Just didn't think the federal government had a role to play, I guess, in providing good modern transportation. And I don't have to tell those of you who have been to Europe or Japan, when you ride on those trains, it's a little embarrassing, isn't it, to come back here? Where we're still putzing along at 79 miles an hour, except in the Northeast Corridor. Kitty and I, last April, were in France and Spain. The year before, we were in Japan, zipping along at 180, 190 miles an hour, fully connected to excellent urban transportation systems, airports connected by mass transit to central cities, and so on and so forth. I mean, it's just expected and done. But that takes leadership, and it takes investment. Not much, actually. Not much, at least in comparison with what we have spent and are continuing to spend on highways and airports in this country. You know, people complain because over the course of its life, Amtrak has received, Jim, help me, subsidies of $30 billion. We've spent nearly $1 trillion on highways and airports and continue to do so. Consider these figures. Federal government today is spending about $33-35 billion a year on highways, about $15 billion on airports, about $7 billion on transit, urban transit, metropolitan transit, and about $1 billion on a national rail passenger system called Amtrak. Sounds kind of out of whack, doesn't it? If you agree with me that a first-class, modern, high-speed rail system is an essential part of this country's future and this region's future. There's a fairly broad bipartisan majority in Congress that wants to do something about this over the opposition of the administration. But while we're waiting for change at the national level, which I hope, God knows, is going to come soon. I thought we were going to get it last year, and of course we didn't. John Kerry would have been the best rail president we ever had. We here in New England, it seems to me, have got to do what we did in New England in the 80s during the Reagan administration. We've got to, on a bipartisan basis, the Senate Commerce Committee has just voted out an excellent national rail passenger bill with $6 billion over a three-year period, led by Trent Lott, who's a big rail guy and understands the importance of a national rail passenger system. And that bill came out of the Senate Commerce Committee by a vote of 19-3. So this is a bipartisan, this is not a partisan issue. It fundamentally has to do with our future, both nationally and internationally, because this dependency on foreign oil is having a profound effect, folks, on our futures, on our policy, on what we do. Now, what about New England? Well, I would like to see the governors of New England take this on, working in very close cooperation with their colleagues in New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania. They were the states that originally formed the Coalition of Northeast Governors back in the 70s when Hugh Carey was the governor of New York, and a bunch of us got together and said we got to do something about it. Interestingly enough, provoked largely by the energy crisis bill in the 70s. And it was these Northeast governors working closely with their congressional delegations, again on a bipartisan basis, that made the case for high-speed rail, which we finally got. Now, it's not what it ought to be. We ought to be able to go from downtown Boston to downtown New York in 3 hours or less. And the reason we can't is because we've got overhead wires between New Haven and New York that haven't been overhauled in 80 years. Isn't that absurd? And it's taking forever to get them done. If that overhead electrical system was repaired and overhauled and in good shape, we could get down there in less than 3 hours. You just can't beat a three-hour ride downtown to downtown from Boston to New York. But that's not the only inner-city corridor in America that needs that kind of service. There are dozens and dozens of them in the East, in the Midwest, in the Far West. Americans will ride trains, if they're any good. Now, what does it mean here in New England? Well, it seems to me it means first in Massachusetts that we've got to complete the job we started in the 70s and 80s. When, if you can believe this, in 1976, we acquired the entire commuter rail system in eastern Massachusetts for a total of $35 million. Can you believe that? It tells you something about how it was valued at that time, the entire system. But we should be working now here in the Commonwealth, in my judgment, to fill in the gaps to connect every single older urban community in the state with our capital city. That means Springfield, Worcester, Fitchburg. It means getting commuter rail down to Fall River, New Bedford. It means extending rail to Hyannis. And it means connecting North and South Station at long last, so we don't have this absurd situation in which you take the train to Lowell and then you got to stop. Suppose you want to go to the Prudential Center. Suppose you want to go down to Quincy. Suppose you want to go to the Cape. You ought to be able to go from Lowell to Cape Cod. You ought to be able to go from Newburyport to Providence. You ought to be able to go from New York to Portland. You can't. Why? Because of this mile gap, which they tell me is the result of lobbying by the cabbies in 1911, who didn't want the thing because they then would lose business taking people from South Station to North Station. Isn't that ridiculous? And by the way, not only would it provide vastly improved service, folks, enormous operational savings for the T, which could pay for a substantial portion of the North-South rail link, it would take 60,000 cars off the road every day. So first and foremost, it seems to me, Massachusetts got to get its act together. And in my judgment, now has to make the building of a first-class rail system in this Commonwealth our top priority for the next decade. You know, we've gone through a series of chapters in transportation history. First, we built all those highways, including the Central Artery, which we spent billions to tear down. Then we stopped building highways inside 128, a sound decision in my judgment, completed the state's highway system outside of 128 and invested heavily in what I think is fair to say is the best public transportation system in the country and a pretty good commuter rail system. The next chapter, the next 10 years in my judgment, ought to focus laser-like here in Massachusetts on connecting North and South Station, substantially improving service to Worcester, getting a train from North Station to Fitchburg in something less than an hour and 40 minutes. Can you believe that? 16 stops. Well, you got to double track these things, folks. You double track them, you can run expresses as well as locals. Getting rail down to the Cape and not wasting money on foolish projects. I mean, $60 million on the Sagamore Bridge. That money would take you from Middleborough to Hyannis. $230 million now being spent right now to add another lane to 128 from Wellesley to Milton. What's that going to do? Just back up the traffic at the Route 3 split by 2 miles instead of one. And the top priority of the current state administration these days, if you can believe this, is spending $1 billion on a bus tunnel under the city, the so-called Silver Line Tunnel, so you can have a no-transfer ride from Dudley to the airport. As Senator Wilkerson, who represents Roxbury and Dorchester, said the other day, most of her people aren't interested in a no-transfer ride to the airport. They don't spend a lot of time at the airport. They're interested in better service in a variety of other ways. So, first and foremost, it seems to me, the Commonwealth itself has got to decide what's important in the transportation sector. And I would suggest to you that the era of highway building is over. I mean, we're not going to double-deck these highways, folks. And unless you have a first-class rail and transit system in this state, the highways won't work. And I don't have to tell you that. Just get on 93 at 5 o'clock in the afternoon going north or going south at 8 in the morning. And there are some very important projects, some of which I've already mentioned, not just connecting North and South Station, but significant improvements. The Fitchburg Line, the Worcester Line, absolutely essential extension of service to Fall River, New Bedford, and Taunton, to the Cape. A Lawrence project, which will dramatically improve service in and beyond Lawrence. I mean, all of these things are easily doable, and by the way, at relatively little cost. I mean, we're not talking about a lot of money here. Now, the link will cost some money, but all of these other things are relatively low cost. Why? Because the rail lines are there, folks. You don't take a single house, you don't have to take a single business. All you have to do is take existing rail rights of way, upgrade them, put in new signals, close off the grade crossings, and buy new equipment. We should be working right now on the so-called Inland Route. That's high-speed rail from Boston to Worcester to Springfield to Hartford to New York. Very important. If you've been to Springfield lately, you'll know that city needs help. And nothing could do more for the city of Springfield than high-speed rail connecting Springfield with New York and Boston simultaneously. Who's working on that? Nobody. Nobody. The rails are there. The lines are there. It's all a question of upgrading the service and providing new equipment. Now, finally, I would argue to you, in addition to that project, which obviously links Massachusetts, Connecticut, and New York, that the region itself needs much improved rail service. I mean, no connections, no rail connections to Nashua and Manchester. Isn't that absurd? Now, I know New Hampshire's an interesting place. They were very good to me in 1988, so you won't hear me saying anything negative about New Hampshire. It's a great state and stuff, but we ought to be working. The new governor of New Hampshire, who after all was brought up in Lynnfield, so he knows something about rail. The new governor of New Hampshire and his colleagues in the New England Governors Conference ought to be working right now, shouldn't they? On plans to, what are we talking about, 10 miles? I mean, it's nothing. The Downeaster has demonstrated, I think, pretty clearly that folks want that service. Portland to Montreal is already an officially designated rail corridor by the Secretary of Transportation under Bill Clinton, making it eligible for significant additional federal aid. And I've already talked about the Inland Route. I mean, these are projects of regional significance, which taken together could give this region a first-class, modern regional rail system. It would not only take an enormous amount of pressure off our highway system, but dramatically improve the quality of life of all of our citizens. Now, what's it going to take? Well, it's going to take leadership, folks. One of the New England governors has to take this on. Unfortunately, our governor has left the New England Governors Conference. He's no longer a member of the New England Governors Conference. I mean, this is crazy. How are we going to do this if the governor of the most populous state, and frankly the state that has to take leadership, isn't even on the New England Governors Conference? He said, well, didn't want to spend $200,000 on dues at the New England Governors Conference. I mean, you know, when I was governor, I had some terrific colleagues who taught me a lot, but let me tell you, we all took the New England Governors Conference very seriously. We tried to work together to help develop important regional policy. In fact, in my first term, when I was chairman of the New England Governors Conference, we invested significant amounts of money. In those days, we had something called the New England Regional Commission, which got some federal money. We made significant investments in the region's freight rail system at a time when rail freight was in terrible shape in this state. So it's got to be done on a regional basis, and the governors have to take leadership on this. If they do, believe me, our senators and congressmen will join them. But it really is the governors, and I would argue, the governor of Massachusetts, whoever that is, who has got to take a leading role in this. Because after all, we are at the center of the region. Well, we've got an election coming up next year. And I don't have to tell you that this is one of a number of critical issues that this state faces. What about the rest of the country? The rest of the country needs a first-class rail system as well. And it wouldn't take folks more than 7% of what we're spending on highways and airports on an annual basis to give us that. I didn't say 70%, I said 7%. I wish I could tell you that President Bush is committed to this. He isn't. I mean, there just isn't any interest in the White House in this. I don't know why. Seems to me this is a no-brainer. The only apparent interest the White House has in investing in rail is if it happens to be the Iraqi rail system, where they're spending $300 to $400 million of your tax money and mine trying to revive a nationalized rail system. This has to be a priority. This is not just a Northeast problem. The Southeast wants high-speed rail. Florida desperately needs high-speed rail. One of the reasons that Lott is a big supporter of rail is because the Gulf Corridor, linking Atlanta, Birmingham, Jackson, and New Orleans, needs high-speed rail. The Midwest, the 10 Midwestern states have come up with their own plan for high-speed rail linking Chicago with each of the major Midwestern cities. Now, that plan would cost about $5 billion. In the meantime, Chicago is pushing ahead with a plan to spend $15 billion to expand O'Hare Airport. One out of every three flights out of O'Hare is for less than 350 miles. If you had a first-class rail system connecting Chicago with each of the major Midwestern cities for a third of the proposed cost of this O'Hare expansion, you could add another third, again, as much capacity to O'Hare by taking those short flights out of there. And by the way, that's true of all of the airports in America. I mean, on average, about a third of the flights in domestic airports in the United States are for 350 miles or less. And we're putting planes up in the air for 350 miles or less. When we could get you from downtown to downtown at 110, 120 miles an hour, easily, on an existing rail system that just needs upgrading and modernization for 7% of what we're spending on highways and airports every year. So, I think it's clear what we have to do. The question is, will we do it? Will we support people in public office who understand this and are prepared to commit to it? And that includes legislators, but more particularly includes chief executives, because at least in my experience, folks, if the person in the governor's office, whoever that is, doesn't take this seriously, isn't committed to it, that's very difficult to make it happen.
Our guest provided a very interesting talk about the need for and support of an expanded and modernized railway system. As we listened and acknowledged that enhancing our railway system seems quite challenging, we can also know that there are ways to personally impact positive change. Specifically, our guest reminds us that we need to vote for executive leadership that supports public transportation. By all appearances, Governor Romney and President Bush would prefer that we stick with our cars, spend thousands annually in gasoline costs, and continue to pollute the environment as we go. As was pointed out, we only need to review where transportation funding is routed to recognize that in the future we need to vote for candidates who align themselves with sustainable development and not the already highly advantaged corporate world. And as our jobs are sent overseas, we needn't be economists to recognize that corporate America is not aligned with us. Another way to affect positive change is to drop an email or make a phone call expressing your desires to your state representative and senators. If enough folks pester them, positive seeds will be planted. It's actually to our advantage that they are very busy people, because then they only have so much time to determine what gets their attention. Let's make sure that what our community wants is moved to the forefront of their thoughts and actions. For a myriad of information about today's sustainability topic and many others, including public transportation, green building, and more, visit wuml-longview.org. This is Issa Khan, thanking you for listening to The Longview on Thinking Out Loud,